This installment is about skepticism, both by mind control victims and directed at them. So what is skepticism? Put simply, it's about applying critical thinking to scientific results. Sometimes you'll see stories that are rooted in scientific misconceptions, and those stories will be questioned, using skepticism as a lever. Our stories themselves shouldn't be considered immune to skepticism. Skepticism is as old as science itself. I think skepticism, sincere skepticism, is great, and arguing with skeptics has helped me a lot. Skepticism helps you winnow out nonsense. It's a reality check from people who have expertise or a perspective that you might not have. The thing is, and my regulars know what I'm talking about, there are a significant number of people out there who call themselves skeptics, but they have an agenda hidden behind the language of skepticism. These people are enabled by a seriously dysfunctional community of skeptics. I'll be going into this in more depth later in this segment. But first, let's look at what the skeptics are up to, how they sometimes get a bad rap, and some things they're doing right. Fundamentally, skepticism is unpleasant for the listening audience. A skeptic's job is to say no. A lot of the time, people don't want to have their knowledge or beliefs critically analyzed. Once again, I refer you to the first episode on disinformation. Misleading information spreads because it gives people something they want. Or in other words, it's more pleasant than the truths it obscures. So in the right context, skepticism is a real downer. Nobody wants to hear it. Getting into scientific results or models, accurate results, accurate models are usually not surprising. So when you hear something that defies common sense, you want to dig deeper. That's where skepticism can theoretically help normal people make sense of the world around them. The various theories about gang stalking are a good example here. I have to tell you that even in late 2009, I was skeptical about the leading explanations of gang stalking, but I didn't have anything else to work with. So I went into the lion's den, finding skeptical people and throwing this red meat into the crowd to see how people would react to it. They came up with many of the criticisms I had. How could so many people be involved without it coming out? How could all these people be recruited and silenced? Where was the money coming from? They were good at shooting things down, but where they fell down was, they weren't so good at coming up with alternate explanations. So we're seeing one of the flaws of skepticism, but I'll get more into that later. So anyway, like I said, when things don't appear to make sense, you want to dig deeper. Science should make sense. That brings us to pseudoscience, which skeptics are pretty good at taking on, and which mind control victims should also be well versed with. Because when you charge into a debate with information that is demonstrably false, it's going to discredit everything else you're saying by association. The difference between science and pseudoscience, in a nutshell, is this. Science is built around testable hypotheses. You strengthen them by finding them to be true, or you refute them by showing them to be false. Pseudoscience uses much of the language of science, but doesn't present us with anything testable. Or if it's tested and found fallacious, the claims morph. Scientific knowledge advances over time. Pseudoscientific knowledge doesn't. Pseudoscience is agenda-driven. The practitioners want to believe in the underlying lies. Ideally, science isn't. So you've got these people out there pushing these pseudoscientific theories which directly impact mind control victims. Some of them are infamous, like, for example, Thomas Bearden. If you've ever heard anything about scalar waves or scalar electromagnetics, be aware that it's stemming from this guy. Bearden is a man who says he's invented a free energy machine. The nature of this claim, I think, has morphed over time. Right now he's saying it pulls energy out of a higher dimension. This claim is highly resistant to independent verification. There's lots of scientific-sounding gobbledygook on his site, but very little in the way of math or physics. The devices apparently don't work with cameras running unless he's there manning it. He won't sell you a device, but he'll sell you a book telling you how to build one. I mean, basically, if you can't see what a fraud this guy is, I don't know what to tell you. But Bearden and people like him, they know their audience. Bearden's audience is, largely, people who distrust the government and believe all kinds of free energy is being kept out of their hands. Of course, there's some reason to distrust the U.S. government, and there is collusion to manipulate the world energy market. Nobody's going to dispute that. But his audience has totally bought into some very deep disinfo, including UFO technology made possible with scalar waves, interstellar stargates, and so on, which I've debunked before. Very credible witnesses have been manufactured for these claims using the mind control technology and psyops we're familiar with. So for that kind of audience, what you really want is any kind of hint of government involvement. Bearden kept trolling government agencies until he got a letter from an office, I think the U.S. Patent Office, saying, "Thank you for your letter, blah, blah, blah. Please substantiate your claims." For someone like Bearden, that's a major prize. He's waving it around, putting it up on his site, saying, "Look, the government is thanking me for my work." There's another great example of that kind of trolling coming from some guy I've heard of. He's selling conversion kits to help your engine run on water instead of gasoline. Except it's not 100% water. It's like a water-gasoline mix. This guy trolled government agencies too, until he got his prize, a letter saying, "Please stop attempting to defraud the public." And now he's going around saying, "I want to sell engines that run on 100% water, but the government won't let me." See how that works? Do you see how he's catering to his audience's beliefs and wishes? One more example I'll go into. Medical practitioners borrowing their patter from Nick Begich. Nick Begich is quite a whale. I'll have to take his book on some other time. But basically, what his book boils down to is this. He's saying, in the first chapter of his book called Controlling the Human Mind, that every atom or every molecule has a resonant frequency. Okay, this is technically correct. But Begich is also saying that strands of DNA, or particular cells, or viruses, or even individual organs, can be singled out by targeting their resonant frequency. He doesn't say so directly in his book, but in interviews, he's saying that must be how the mind control technology really works. I'm going to have to go after him at a later date. Right now, I'm just going to have to say that might theoretically be possible in laboratory conditions, but pulling off the extremely precise effects that mind control victims are familiar with in real-world conditions is a totally different ballgame. I mean, technology has advanced a lot. You're seeing some amazing things with chips these days. But what is a chip? It's basically a microscopic laboratory. And a chip is put inside a package, isolating it physically from the outside world, and it has a very small number of controlled electrical connections with its environment. So yeah, you can do some amazing stuff in a laboratory. And thanks to manufacturing advances, you can put an entire laboratory, a controlled environment, in a tiny chip. But as soon as you try to do things to messy, imperfect biological organisms remotely, outside a laboratory, in unknown atmospheric conditions with unknown obstacles, that's just totally different. But anyway, there are people out there selling services along the lines of, "We'll bombard your body with certain frequencies, and those frequencies will purify your body. We can destroy cancer cells, bacteria, viruses at will, and make you feel better." I mean, wow. They're sitting on the cure for cancer. At the very least, wouldn't they want to publish these frequencies? Why are they suppressing this information? But what these healers are arguing is that it's going to be specific to the individual, and they're going to have to zero in on the frequencies necessary to provide the healing effect. Right away, you see one of the warning signs of pseudoscience. No progress is possible because it has to be tuned to the individual. Here's the way it looks to me, to be honest. You go into this doctor's office because you're not feeling well, or you think you need to do this on a regular basis to stay well. And he has an assistant run a device over you for half an hour. Maybe you feel better afterwards, and the doctor accepts your praise. Or maybe you don't, and you're told, "You'll start feeling better soon." And if you don't feel better after a while, you're told, Well, we didn't find the right frequencies. Come back next week. Sounds an awful lot like a placebo to me. The placebo effect is real. A lot of the time, if people believe something is making them healthier, it actually does make them feel better. It's really just high-tech fortune-telling or psychic reading. It means something only because you want it to mean something. The only guaranteed result is that you're going to be out some money. These anecdotes, these episodes of wishful thinking, shouldn't be the basis for the exposure of a worldwide program of mind control. All right, I've talked up skepticism as a problem-solving approach for a bit. Now I'd like to look at the dark side, the side we confront. When it comes to certain kinds of issues, like the ones we're faced with, skeptics are consistently on the wrong side of the fence. It seems like they're always in a position where they're covering for the actions of powerful criminals. Why is this? Let me point out, first of all, that skepticism always has an agenda. There's no such thing as an impartial skeptic sitting out there in cyberspace computing skeptical results. Just as an example, skepticism in the research community. If a researcher has built a career around a set of results or a model, and a paper comes out saying his results or his model is wrong, he's going to challenge it. His career is under attack. Scientists are humans too. They've got to protect their livelihood. Getting closer to the true nature of skepticism, the bottom line is, skeptics don't come up with ideas, they criticize them. I found this to be true in my arguments with skeptics, as I said earlier. These guys are very unimaginative, and if they are asked to provide an alternate explanation, they'll just grab the first explanation they find in the box. And what would that be? You're mentally ill. That's where the mass media propaganda comes in. It's providing easy answers to people who don't want to think, which is most people, even most skeptics. And skeptics play a role in creating that propaganda. Remember what I said earlier, a skeptic's job is to say no. No, you're not allowed to think that. Only mentally unfit people express these ideas. If you say these things, you must be stupid, uneducated, a conspiracy theorist. So what skeptics are doing, in essence, is flinging ridicule at dissenters. If you step forward and say, hey, look, a bunch of powerful people are committing these terrible crimes and they're protected by the system, they're going to be saying, you have no proof. By the way, from what I've seen, most skeptics are middle class or upper middle class white males. Not too many black faces at skeptic conferences. It's a white bread thing. That might help explain why they're taking the side of the strong against the weak, but how did they come to believe they're actually doing good? Is that really what they believe? Is their expressed desire to fight back a rising tide of mysticism and ignorance actually rationalization for something uglier? Just as I said earlier, when you see something that doesn't make sense, you have to dig deeper. Let's take a closer, skeptical look at skepticism. Looking at the history of the skeptic community, James Randi, this is the stage name of a magician. He first made a name for himself by going after another magician, Uri Geller, who is pulling the wool over the mainstream media's eyes with claims of paranormal powers. Randi recognized the magic tricks underlying Geller's demonstrated paranormal abilities, like spoon bending, and debunked him. So, that was the start of a career in paranormal debunking. He went after several high-profile psychics, and even faith healers, bankrupting one of them. He wrote a book about these experiences later, in which he justified his anger and relentlessness towards these people as arising from sympathy for the helpless victims of frauds. That's kind of ironic, don't you think? Okay, anyway, in the 70s, he was also a founding member of a skeptics organization, CSICOP, PSYCOP, the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal. So what James Randi did, unwittingly or not, whether his true intentions were as expressed or not, was sow the seeds for a disastrous turn in skepticism. Skepticism as performance art. Two other celebrated skeptics, Penn and Teller, who have their own show debunking various con artists, are also magicians. this isn't a coincidence. What are the implications of skepticism as performance art? First, nobody wants to watch a lousy entertainer. The performer has to give his audience what they want, performance after performance. Second, nobody wants to watch a performer screw up. A steady stream of victories has to be guaranteed. If you go to skeptics' websites or look at who skeptics go after, it's all straw men. Like, for instance, homeopathy. Homeopathy is this idea that if you dilute water containing a substance by a factor of 100 and do this a few dozen times, it still maintains some properties of the original substance. How do I know this? Because it's the top topic, or near the top, of every damn skeptic website. Homeopathy is bogus. We get it. But they cover it over and over again, obsessively. Homeopathy is the perfect punching bag. If it didn't exist, the skeptic community would have to invent it.
Maybe they did.
So these repeated successes that skeptics look for and get breed confidence, even arrogance. And that leads them into areas they really shouldn't be touching. In 2006, the middle of Bush 2's second term, PSYCOP became simply PSY, Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. They started diving into fights with much better armed opponents. Like, for instance, they got involved with the global warming issue. Skepticism, Randi style, had become something very different from what James Randi originally envisioned, or said he envisioned. Right now, you have two very toxic trends in skepticism. The first is this outgrowth of the performer ethic in the skeptic community. These guys are emulating what they've seen Randi do, just like monkeys. Monkey see, monkey do. The ones who want to make a name for themselves need repeated, successful performances. They need to beat the tar out of 98-pound weaklings on a regular basis. They need a steady supply of straw men. I've seen these guys go after mind control websites, but they only attack the weakest ones. The online communities exploit another social mechanism, outgroup aggression. This is a real thing. The physiological basis for it has been identified, the oxytocin hormone, maybe better called the tend and defend hormone. And also, these repeated and guaranteed victories cause a surge in testosterone and endorphin levels. You've got these mostly male communities getting off on hormonal highs by repeatedly attacking and ridiculing straw men. They're basically drug addicts and bullies. It's not a pretty sight. Don't take my word for it. Just look at how the skeptic sites operate, how they word their attacks, who they choose to go after. It's a very toxic, toxic environment. They hate the word toxic, by the way, so be sure to use it as much as possible in your interactions with them. The second undesirable trend is the use of skepticism as a shield to attack enemies of corporate interests. And this is the action I think CSI got in on in 2006. I think there's some money coming in from oil companies to go after environmental interests. So the skeptic community is also degenerating into a corporate propaganda channel. They've become apologists for powerful criminals hiding behind the corporate veil. Anyone can pretend to be a skeptic or use the language of skepticism to attack enemies of an industry or corporation. Anyone at all. Skeptics are dead wrong when they apply their mental toolset to criminal activities. Scientific inquiry doesn't work in criminal investigations, at least not directly. Criminals conspire to hide the truth. They cover their tracks, they create false leads, and so on. You have to think of criminal conspiracies not in terms of skepticism, but in terms of criminology. Motive, method, and opportunity. Once you've got suspects, you start gathering evidence. Only then can you even begin to use scientific or skeptical inquiry to analyze what you've got. So, winding down, what we've got is that skepticism, the populist variety that we're going to be running into over and over again, is rooted in the work of magicians, and the tools of magicians are distraction and misdirection. Is this populist skepticism itself being used to distract and misdirect? Are the skeptics going after straw men created to cover up related crimes? Unfortunately, most people who listen to the arguments of skeptics are never going to hear this audio. We have to placate the skeptics of the world. So, don't give your opponent straw men or things that look like straw men. At least some skeptics, the intellectually honest ones, are willing to acknowledge there are problems with populist skepticism. If you get harangued by self-identified skeptics, be sure to point those problems out. Do your own fact-checking and skepticism before you go to the public. At the very least, you want to be able to answer the skeptical questions that come up. You need to be able to argue.